morning, everyone, and welcome to ULT in Philadelphia.
Microphone?
Done.
I'll yell that. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor offices, the sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all those who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Our program is as follows. Before we go further, we'd like you to see this little card on the back. It's called the United Lodge of Theosophers, and it states, being in sympathy with the purposes of this lodge as set forth in the declaration, I hereby record my desire to be enrolled as an associate, it being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part, other than that which I myself determine. If you'd like to find out more about this, speak to the student or the volunteer at the desk as you leave. We have several meetings during the course of the month. This morning, Sunday, began at 11 a.m. and it'll be over at 12 noon. And of course, the doors are open at 10:30. Today is May 1st, and the beginning of our study or our consideration of the topic, psychism and spirituality. And today, the topic is stages of spiritual growth. There's a meeting every Wednesday. Doors open at 5:30, and you may come in and go in the library in the front of the building, and there you will find straight line theosophical literature and other literature also. There's always a volunteer there to help you, one, find out what the talk and the study and the class that evening will be, and also various references. All the theosophical, straight line theosophical literature is there. In addition, you may inspect the literature you find in the middle room at the desk during library hours and before and after each meeting. We'd like to bring to your attention that the third Friday of every month, the is a special talk from 7 till 8. Of course, get here a little early. Doors open at 6:30. May 20th. The topic will be Confucianism, the path of balance. Now, we'd like to bring to your attention on the book table near the usher is a new flyer as regards the symposium to be held in Bethesda, Maryland, coming up in May.
Saturday the 14th.
14th. So pick up one as you leave and take a look at that topic for that symposium. Now the symposium is 11 a.m. to 4:30 at the Washington, D.C. ULT.
Sunday, next Sunday.
Next Sunday?
Read next Sunday.
Yeah.
May 8th.
May 8th, okay. Just brought to my attention that May 8th is White Lotus Day. And that is a day when we remember and honor H.P. Blavatsky and Theosophy. White Lotus Day. We have a reading for you this morning. It's from the writings by H.P. Blavatsky. In this case, it's called Spiritual Progress. And she quotes from a poem by one named Christian Rossetti. Does the road wind uphill all the way? Yes. To the very end. Will the day's journey take the whole long day? From morning to night, my friend. Well, these verses are like an epitome of the life of those who are truly treading the path which leads to higher things. Whatever differences are to be found in the various presentations of the esoteric doctrine, as in every age, it donned a fresh garment, different both in hue and texture to that which preceded. Yet, in every one of them, we find the fullest agreement upon one point, the road to spiritual development. One only inflexible rule has been ever binding upon the neophyte, as it is binding now, the complete subjugation of the lower nature by the higher. From the Vedas and the Upanishads to the recently published Light on the Path, search as we may through the Bibles of every race and cult, we find but one only way, hard, painful, troublesome, by which man can gain the true spiritual insight. And how can it be otherwise, since all religions and all philosophies are but the variants of the first teachings of the one wisdom imparted to men at the beginning of the cycle? The true adept, the developed man, must, we are always told, become. He cannot be made. The process is therefore one of growth through evolution. And this must necessarily involve a certain amount of pain.
Michael. We offer you, every one of you who might be interested, a challenge. Find in the teachings of Theosophy a definition of spiritual growth. You won't be able to do it because it is individual to every soul, because it is experienced. It is a life that becomes. You can find articles on spiritual health, on spiritual progress, the article of HPB's we just heard from, but nowhere can you find a diagram or an explanation of this is spiritual growth, this is how it happens, this is what is required, you must do this before you do that. Granted, we all know that in the voice of the silence, we have the seven gates, the first five of which we can all recognize as qualities that we have to develop along the way, but they are not the whole of it. You can't say at that end of those five gates that you are spiritually grown. The challenge for each and every one of us in recognizing this is to realize what is the basis for spiritual growth. And that is really very simple. Theosophy teaches that life is a grand school of being, of learning, of living, that we as thinkers entered into human forms 18 million years ago for a dual purpose, not just for our own spiritual growth, but to elevate the lower kingdoms, to lift them to the point of being ready to be a human form. The fact is that every one of us, even if we've never heard these ideas, we've never cared about anything except material life, every one of us is in the process of spiritual growth. That's why we're here. Even if we ignore it, even if we fail to do it. Just as in a school, the one who never studies, never does their homework, is forced to drop out. They can't continue. They can't make the grade. So that will happen with those who will not make the effort. They will drop out till the next great period of evolution. It says that there comes a point, and it's really in the next round, where powers will be necessary. And if you don't have them, you can't pretend to have them. It will be a thing of reality. So it's individual, and we each have to take ourselves in hand and realize that our higher nature is where we must turn. And the best friends we will ever have for that are the materials that have been left for us by wise beings throughout the ages. And of course, theosophy pulling it all together for us. Now, what about the stages then? If we can't define spiritual growth, how are we going to define the stages? Well, the stages of anything are the same, whether you're studying mathematics, learning to play tennis, ride a bicycle, control your emotional nature, expand your mind, whatever, they're all the same. Novice. The novice doesn't know what the novice doesn't know. We've all been there many times, haven't we? Then there's the beginner. You know about it, but you're not very good at it. And that's within the study of theosophy, that's almost a comical stage, because it's at that beginner stage that you are so full of enthusiasm for the beauty of what you're hearing, that brotherhood is a fact, that wisdom belongs to all of us, cannot be sold to us, that feeling you have within you of love for life and others is the divine spark in you. It's your real nature. Well, at that beginner phase, we are giddy with this, and we want to run around and tell everybody. And we're sure we turn off a lot of people who will never look at theosophy in this life because we did that without any discretion. But it is an act of love. We can forgive ourselves. But from the beginner, we move to the intermediate. We know it, but in order to use it, we have to really concentrate on it. We find ourselves in the middle of something, and it's, oh, that's not what a theosophist should do or say. That's not how I should act. We know it, but we aren't able to do it that well. But that is an important learning. As you make mistakes and you begin to correct yourself, sooner or later, you're catching yourself just before you do it. Then there's the competent. When you're competent, you're using what you know while you're learning more. And it is at this point, what is that called when you, epiphany. It's at this point when you will have epiphanies, something about yourself you never understood, and you will suddenly realize, oh, I am so embarrassed. I have behaved like that all my life, and I never knew it was rude or unkind or just plain stupid. You have an epiphany about yourself, or you have an epiphany about life and the beauty of it. Now, HPB talks about seeing the spiritual in a litter of baby pigs, to see that, to see everything as an expression of beauty, of life, of wisdom. And then there's proficient. When we're proficient at something, we're consistently doing it. It's habitual. It has become a habit. Then we know we can trust that in ourselves. Well, if we can do it about one thing, we can do it about everything. I don't know if any of you have read this, but we experimented and found it was true. Science says that it takes 21 days to set a new habit. And we tried it to see, and by golly, you don't have to think about it after 21 days. You just get up and do it. So if we can do it in one thing or one area, we can do it anywhere. It's what we choose. And then the last stage, we all know what that is. The expert, the master, where we speak of intuition or flow. It's all there. The whole of it is perfected. So those are the stages, and we can recognize those for ourselves. But what am I supposed to do about it? Well, we found this wonderful article written by a student anonymously. It's called When to Expect Spiritual Help. For all men, one rule holds good. Live the purest and most unselfish life you possibly can. Cultivate alike your mind and heart. Detach your mind as far as possible from worldly pleasures, worldly desires, worldly objects, and set your heart as undividedly as your strength permits on doing good to all living things. If you thus reach, or have in past lives by similar exertions reached, a certain stage of spiritual awakenment, you will find others more advanced from whom you will receive encouragement and some little help. Though in the main, each soul has to work out its own road. If you meet none such, then you know that you have not reached the stage at which such encouragement is desirable, and you have only to persevere. He then goes, I say he, it could have been she, goes on to use the example of why You have not reached a stage where such encouragement is desirable. You would think that anyone would want to encourage you in your efforts. Well, he uses the example of amaryllis. An amaryllis bulb. If you've ever seen it, it looks like an onion. It's a brown, oniony, scaly thing. It isn't attractive at all. And you put it in dirt and you leave it alone. If you don't leave it alone, you will cause it to rot and to die. You wait until it shows that first little tiny green shoot. Then you can water it sparingly. And then as it gets bigger and bigger, you can give it more water, more food, more attention, more fuel. Well, the soul is exactly the same way. If we were to be inundated, flooded with all of the attention, it would ruin us. We need to show that acceptance, that desire, that little spark of green, and then we can be assisted. So we need just a few basic things. And the most important is faith in karma. We have to trust that it is a universe of law. If we don't trust karma, how can we set up better causes? And that's what we're supposed to do. We run the show the other way. We have an effect of some kind that we don't like, and we battle that effect. Well, that's ridiculous. That's like trying to tell the tidal wave to go away. No, it's better to go get some higher ground and let the tidal wave have its moment, because it's going to. So we have to learn to trust that law, assume the responsibility for what comes to us. We don't have to figure out where or when or how. Suppose you have a very difficult disease. Oh, what did I do? No, you have no way of knowing. It might be that you had no sympathy for someone in some life who had a very difficult disease, and you just thought they were being babyish or childish. And now in this life, you're going to experience it, and you'll know. It's not easy. So we're not trying to find out the how and why and when of the problems we have. We're trying to find out our own strength in living with them, in doing the best we can in spite of them, in realizing, you know, this instrument, this car I'm driving may be breaking down, but I'm not. And knowing that, we know we can face anything. And we can't even imagine what we have been through in these millions of years. We have strength and power we haven't even dreamt of. Meditation and self-study. We are to spend some time every day in touch with our true nature, in harmony with all of life, and to study ourselves so that we may realize both sides, the things we have to repair, undo, as well as the things we have to encourage to grow more. HPB reminds us, students are required to practice the habit of careful and constant concentration of mind upon every duty and act in life they may have to do, and not to reserve their efforts in that direction for the consideration of these teachings only, every act and duty. We're told to be punctual, to be honest, to be considerate, to be receptive to the duties that come to us. And she has this wonderful way of saying how we are to grow. Again, this is HPB. And this is how it is. In the course of our lives, the trouble that comes upon us is always just the one we feel to be the hardest that could possibly happen. It is always the one thing we feel we cannot possibly bear. If we look at it from a wider point of view, we shall see that we are trying to burst through our shell at its one vulnerable point, that our growth, to be real growth, must progress evenly throughout, just as the body of a child grows, not first the head and then a hand, followed perhaps by a leg, but in all directions at once, regularly and imperceptibly. Man's tendency is to cultivate each part separately, neglecting the others in the meantime. Every crushing pain is caused by the expansion of some neglected part, which expansion is rendered more difficult by the effects of the cultivation bestowed elsewhere. By ignoring the areas where we don't want to grow, we make our life more difficult in trying to grow in the areas we want to grow. We have to reevaluate. And that's what we're told every night, to spend some time reviewing, but not in a critical way, not to take the position of the higher, but to do it in the way that you would do with your child or your best friend. You would be gentle but truthful, and you would hope that the friend or the child would be open to what's being said. Well, in this case, you're both. You're the child, but you're also the parent. So you are in a position where you're not critical of yourself. You're critical of the actions and critical of the attitude, which you can change. So that review takes place, and hopefully the next day or the next week, if you meet the same situation, you will be a little different because of that looking at it. HPB again. Evil is often the result of over-anxiety, and men are always trying to do too much. They are not content to leave well enough alone and to do always just what the occasion demands and no more. They exaggerate every action and so produce karma to be worked out in a future birth. One of the subtlest forms of this evil is the hope and desire of reward. Many there are who, albeit often unconsciously, are yet spoiling all their efforts by entertaining this idea of reward and allowing it to become an active factor in their life, and so leaving the door open to anxiety, doubt, fear, despondency, failure. We don't have to be over anxious. You know, so many times when one thinks about spirituality, we think of it as nebulous. It is not at all like the physical. All we have to do is sort of believe in it or find proofs that we have this power. But that's not necessary. We already are spiritual beings. If we would take that and act as if nothing can harm me, nothing can stop me or slow me but me, I can stand in my way, nothing else in the universe can. If we begin to really realize that, we become fearless. What reward do we need for being that when everyone else and everything else is that? So we can let go of all that hope for reward. Why should anyone reward us for for being spiritual? Isn't it reward enough in itself? Isn't the possibility of learning and growing and sharing enough for all of us? So we haven't really defined spiritual growth because it can't be defined. It has to be experienced. But every one of us can sit down and look at our nature. Look in the Gita. Oh, this is a humbling experience. Look at the definition of a wise man in the Gita and take those characteristics, those attributes, and see how well you do. Well, I'm a novice here and a beginner there, and I don't even know what this one means. We have, perhaps, a long way to go in many areas, but ask anyone who loves you, and you will discover you have a lot of accomplishment already. The very fact that we're sitting in these rooms considering these ideas on a beautiful day is proof that there is a lot of growth. Many in this room don't need to hear this at all. So why are they here? To support the effort to make a light, an inner light that serves the city of Philadelphia, the state of Pennsylvania, the United States, the earth, the world. That is what we do. We give of our time and our service and anything else we can. And that is an area of spiritual growth. So whether we're a beginner or we're intermediate, it doesn't matter. Because this life is just a little picture of potential. Some in this room may be so far beyond what we can imagine in terms of growth and power, but are for one reason or another in a humbler situation. Doesn't matter, because we are all one and the same in essence. And you know how it said in the beginning about someone more experienced being able to help you? Well, isn't that what we have right here? There are some who've studied 30, 40 years. Some who've studied 10. Doesn't matter. Sometimes a person who has studied just a few months may see something in a way that opens it for all of those who've studied for years but never realized it. It is a group effort of individual study. You are the unique representative of sameness. So, your questions are invited, yes.
Did you say sameness or sameness?
Well, it could be both. I wouldn't promise that everyone in this room is sane, but sameness, yes, identical.
Okay.
Yes.
Two things. The first is we were thinking in the sense of the very last thing you said, aren't we really like fractals, where you break off a piece and you see a repetition of the whole, in the sense that as we experience spiritual growth through these efforts, we are calling upon that previous learning which makes up the whole of us, which we are unaware of, and hopefully using it for better. So in a sense, aren't we a fractal? And the second thing was...
Yes, we are fractals. Go on.
Faith was mentioned, and it came up in a previous class. What is that faith that we are gifted with, and how does that serve us in this course of...
Well, if you say, what is that faith, it sounds like a particularized thing. You have muscles. What is that muscle? The question doesn't make any sense, does it? Faith is a power, and that's all it is. It isn't that we are put on earth to accept or trust or believe in one thing. It's that we have a power, and because of that power, we become what we place that power on. We don't realize that. And therefore we get heartbroken because we place that, become towards that, grow as that, and then discover it's not real. And then we are heartbroken. What we need to put our faith in is universal principles, not other beings, not religions, not science, but in principles. If we trust that this is a universe of law, nothing can stop us. Yes?
Well, we're looking at the development of somebody's spirituality as it's a process from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. So since it is a process then, can we look at a hardcore materialist who really has no desire to look at the spirituality side of life? Would he also be considered as being on this path as well?
Okay, first, Theosophy tells us, don't do that. Don't be looking at anybody else and making any judgments. He's a materialist, he's a this, he's a that. Equally, don't do it with yourself. If you are looking in a really intense sense, where am I? Then you are moving in the other direction. Because to have that as a motive is to defeat your own growth. So, if though we take it just as a theoretical thing, what about a materialist? The problem is that no one but an adept could ever judge the individual case. So the person you see as a materialist might have spent life after life ridiculing materialists. Who knows? And they may have a store of wisdom in themselves that after they get through with this experience, they will move on. You know, Mr. Judge uses the example of the miser. He says, you see this person whose only interest is collecting coins and cash, and, you know, just like Ebenezer Scrooge. And you think, oh, I am in such better condition. I am so much more spiritual than that. And he says, it could be that that's the very last thing that soul held on to in several lives and must now work it out so that they can bloom in their mastery. In other words, it's the one defect. So we can't tell. The materialist of today may be the master of tomorrow. Yes?
Sure. We have, you know, one of our dearest friends from childhood who we still really can't understand why, but is totally dismissive of anything that has anything to do religion, the spiritual side of life, or life after death. Not only does he not care, but he doesn't believe in all this stuff.
Right.
And the fact is, after knowing him for 35 years, you know, he couldn't be a better father. He couldn't be a better provider for his wife. I don't know if he could be a better friend to all the group of friends that so whether or not he gets it, believes it, understands it, is irrelevant, because what he's doing speaks
his life. Yes, but his life is one of love, obviously, and sharing. We don't need the labels that we think we do. And that's another thing. There are many people who think that you have to have a degree sort of thing, where they will go and they will spend thousands of dollars to get this piece of paper that says they have done this spiritual work. But that doesn't mean anything. It's internal. How can anybody else judge you, test you? As a matter of fact, what does test you? Life. Over and over and over again. And you finally decide, okay, I have got this. I am not going to lose my temper in that situation again. And immediately, life begins bringing up the very things that trigger you. Not to be cruel, but because you said, I'm ready. Give me the test. And then you learn for yourself. Have I learned it? Am I able to do that? But instead of being defeated, if we're not able to do it, take notes. What made me fail? What did I feel? What did I think? How close am I getting to this control? It should be several places we are told a thing of joy. Your life in its worst moments should be a thing of joy, because you're either working off something very difficult, some old thing from the past. And remember, when it comes to physical things, that's the last stage of a karma. So whatever it is, we should rejoice it. And knowing that we're going to return, we should improve things. Mr. Krupp, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
We were just thinking, how is it possible that...
A little louder.
How is it possible that if the problem is on the mental plane, that it works out on the physical plane?
Ah, well, it doesn't. You see, that's the problem. If there's a problem on the mental plane, it's going to, in the next life perhaps, be in the physical plane. It isn't a simultaneous thing. Although we can get to the point where we can process things very quickly, where we feel different and we behave differently. Remember, we're told to make our mind and heart receptive to our higher nature. If you really do that, you can't respond in the same way. Just the way kids in a sandbox will fight over something. If you were sitting there with them, you wouldn't feel the same way, you wouldn't act the same way, and you would understand what was going on for those children. So as we mature, we change. And sometimes we feel and see it. But just as with children, if you're with a child every day, someone who hasn't seen them for months will say, oh, how this child has grown, but you don't see it because you were there every day. Well, it's the same way with yourself. Sometimes you don't see it till someone says something, and sometimes you don't see it till a life experience shows you, wow, I didn't do the same thing. I'm growing up. Not easy, but it's possible, yes.
Well, our comment is in reference to the term focus.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows that with a telescope.
Some of us don't do well at that.
Well, the better scope you have, you can really focus the scope and see things you wouldn't ordinarily see. So it appears that what our talk is about is that change of focus.
Mm-hmm.
We know of a situation in the South, in South Carolina, over 100, 200 years ago, a visitor at an old man's home. The door was propped open, and he was able to walk in, but he happened to turn and see this rock holding the door open. And he asked the housekeeper, well, it's just a piece of stone. Well, the one who was visiting picked the stone up, and to make the story short, it turned out to be a large gold nugget of gold.
And it's a million-dollar doorstop.
Well, in the East Coast, you know, before they discovered gold out west, we had mines in Georgia and South Carolina and so forth. Focus.
Yes.
Now, what's the difference between the person using it as a door prop and the visitor who happened to notice?
Well, it would have to be motive, because some people would be more harmed by huge amounts of money and the temptations it would bring to them. So focus, yes, but to take your metaphor or your analogy, the gold is in ourselves, and there's a clay covering. The problem is we think this clay covering is hot stuff. We think it's all there is, and we're afraid of losing it. And every great spiritual teacher has said, wait, you're gonna lose it. Everything that is compound must die. It must die. You're going to lose it. So why don't you put your focus on what you're going to keep, which is the gold within yourself. You had your hand up?
Yeah, we were thinking maybe an adept lived in that house, because it said that gold or a stone.
Yes,
or anything,
all the same.
It's all the same. And
but why? Why does that? Why are we told that?
They know the proper use of everything, and really, gold is what destroyed all the native populations.
No, love of gold, and the greed to get it from people.
Right, that's what
yes.
we're talking about. It's
but it
greed.
Isn't the gold. It isn't the gold itself.
Well,
it isn't. It's like money. Money is the root of all evil. No, that's not the expression. The love of money is the root of all evil.
That's what we're trying to illustrate.
Okay, but the problem is we think gold is precious, and we think stone is not. The problem is in our attitude and not the thing itself. So an adept knows it is exactly the same. If we would just learn and realize that. Way in the back. Yes.
During the talk, there was a statement made, I want to make sure I heard it right, about it may be that some of us don't need to be here hearing this information. What's the difference between coming to a center, a study center like this one,
mm-hmm.
and participating in a collective study, as we are this morning, and remaining in isolation and living listening to a podcast?
No, I think it was a misunderstanding. What we meant was, some in this room don't need to hear this talk. They probably know more about it than the speaker who's giving it, because they are students of theosophy. But they are here because they share then their mental power, their heart power, their light within that room. You know, you can have a speaker that's just awful and it doesn't matter. You can leave with real gems because of what is in the hearts and minds of the rest of the people. So no, we didn't mean that. But the other things, the podcast, like all of our Sunday mornings, except where we've had microphone problems, and all of our Friday evenings are online. You can go and you can listen if you didn't get to go. You can, for $1, get a CD of a Wednesday night class that we've had. So we're not saying the quality is worth $1. We're just saying that that's what we're going to charge you. The fact is that we have access to things now. It's amazing. Picture yourself a number of years ago, how hungry you were for these ideas. Even if you barely recognized it yourself, there was always that, I want to know, I want to understand, I want to feel part of something that's beautiful, that's universal, that's loving and giving. We are so privileged, and that's why we continue to come even when we don't need to be here to hear this talk. We need the teachings and we need each other. Yes.
We use the term spiritual being.
Spirituality
and spiritual being. What is that really? For most of us, it goes in one ear and out the other. But we have some concept of spirit. and spirituality, then all of this is spirit in action, wouldn't you say?
Well, that's the other beautiful part of study, the realization that, I mean, the way we talk about it, it's in contrast. Matter, or the physical, the personal, the separate side of life. But it's as much spirit as spirit. Actually, we're told the analogy is spirit and matter are like the hand. It's two sides of one thing, but it's just one thing. And if we really think about it, if matter is as much spirit as spirit, then matter is the great sacrifice, putting itself in the lesser position so that spirit, the thinkers, can have the opportunity to learn and grow. So matter is not a negative thing, it's just the other side of spirit. Yes?
We hear the term checked by karma periodically.
We also feel it, don't you think?
So how does it work then if somebody is very dedicated and they're trying to learn, trying to experience universal brotherhood in their lives, but karma always comes and blocks them with any kind of a reason. So, I mean, it's a sad thing to watch or even to experience.
No, it is not a sad thing because it means that you are finishing something. Let's say you have this great desire to help the world. And every time you set out to do something, you are blocked. You are either financially unable to help, or you can't leave your job, or there's 1,001 ways you can be blocked from something. But if you are, and your motive stays the same, you're not defeated, you are realizing there are things that I have put into motion that are preventing me from being able to do this. What can I do? You know, it's Mr. Crosby's wonderful question when somebody said, oh, if only I had more time and more money, I would do such wonderful things for theosophy. And he said, well, what do you do with the time and the money you have now? That's exactly what you will be doing in the future. So we don't have these wild ideas. We think instead, oh, okay, I'm being checked by my karma. I can't do this, what I want to do. What can I do instead? And if it's only sit and study, maybe write a paper on being checked by karma. Educate ourselves. Yes, yes.
So it's almost like learning a new vocabulary.
Or language.
Language, ideas. Because if we continue to use the set we already possess and have worked for, we'll get the same results. The definition of insanity we know is doing it over again in the same way and expecting a different result. So it's somehow understanding that there's, as was said, an expansion that's possible, which we think is that faith, that power of faith, this is possible. And then with as much good motive and direction from teachings and things we know to be good, we've proven that, we've tested it, we we're trying out our new vocabulary. We may not pronounce things right, we may not act just in the right way, but as soon as we see the slight alteration, it enforces that fact that this is possible. So it's also a courage. There's some kind of a courage involved in there. Let me step outside what I know and hold to be true and see if there's more. Mm-hmm. And how can I use that and make life better for the world?
Do you remember that Indiana Jones movie where Sean Connery played his father? Mm-hmm. And he's standing at this cliff and there's nothing and he has to get from here over to there. and there's absolutely nothing. It's just empty space down for thousands of miles. And he has to screw up his courage and use his faith and step out. And as soon as he steps on it, the entire bridge becomes visible. Well, that is the same sort of thing. It's only the first step that takes courage. If you dare to say to yourself, okay, I am responsible for everything that comes to me, not just the bad or the difficult. Hey, I'm responsible for all the good I have too. Okay, if that's true, I am going to trust karma. I am going to act as if I'm a spiritual being. It's only that first step that takes the courage, because you are a spiritual being, and that awareness will become more and more visible to you. The beauty is that we, not only that we have the teachings, but we have each other. We are. I wish you hadn't used the example of vocabulary. We are supports for each other. We can call on each other personally. I'm having a very difficult time. Talk to me about theosophy. Because sometimes your mind won't do it. You're checked by your karma. So you call on each other. You use each other. We feed each other. There's a wonderful article called Friends or Enemies for the Future by Mr. Judge. Read it. Yes.
We were just thinking, we're not sure if it was Indiana Jones or another movie, but there's a scene where the treasure is on the other side again of an expanse, and there are poles or logs sticking up of different heights and sorts. And you step on one, and it may go down, and mm-hmm. you better have the courage to. So they're all the helpers. And in this case, that one didn't have what you needed right now, but the next one is right ahead of you. And it is that sort of reaching out and paying attention to what we're offered. And maybe you do need to hold someone's hand to take that first mm-hmm. step. They need to hold yours as well. And then you let go and then step forward again on your own. That's how we learn.
There is nothing wrong with needing each other. We're supposed to form a nucleus of universal brotherhood. But we can't do it for the whole world where we are right now. So we do it where we find ourselves, within our home, within our work if we can, but especially within our studentship, yes.
But isn't there a word of caution here that we do need each other? We need each other mm-hmm. desperately, but we need each other on a much higher plane than the personal. Personal is what interrupts our life. It's our spiritual.
Well, we didn't mean the personal. I mean, but sometimes it's
no,
a personal.
You don't need the personal. I mean, I'm just saying.
No.
You don't rely on the personal. That is not what you build. It's
right.
You build the character of our spiritual nature.
Of course.
Well,
we wanted to end with some things by Mr. Crosby, and we think you can decide for yourself by just this little description. He wrote this about impersonality, but it fits everywhere. If we are developing the child heart, if we are learning to love things beautiful, if we are becoming more honest and plain and simple, if we are beginning to sense the sweet side of life, if we are getting to like our friends better and extending the circle, if we feel ourselves expanding in sympathy, if we love to work for theosophy and do not ask position as a reward. Now, we remind you that next Sunday is a very special day for students of theosophy. It is White Lotus Day, the commemoration of the life and work of H.P. Blavatsky, our teacher, for whom we are full of love and gratitude. So We invite you to come, and if you can come a little early, 5 minutes early, before the class, and sit and perhaps just feel the importance of her life and her work. Meeting is adjourned.